Thank you, Anna. Okay, we've got two microphones here. So if you have any questions, you want to come to the microphone or comments?
I loved what you had to say, and it has raised my consciousness even more than this. And it's a wonderful culmination.
It's not on.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on now.
Now it is. My question is this. For years, I have loved at the Easter liturgy, the Easter vigil, the story from Genesis. And I've read it many times, and I've proclaimed it many times. But it's the idea of have dominion. I was just wondering if you could put that in a different light so that when I hear it or if I proclaim it, I will have a different sense of what that means.
Thank you, Kathy. Great question. So that word dominion in the story of creation, obviously it's turned to us that we are to have dominion over the creatures. Well, I think what happens, that's an example of a word in English that in the back of our mind we think of domination. Would you agree? Okay. A better word, better translation is stewardship. Care with, not just care for, but care with. Okay? So you might want to change that word to stewardship. And this is the work of scripture scholars when they're translating the Hebrew to find words that more accurately capture the original word in a story. But stewardship, have care for and care with. Yes. Yes. And we see what happens when you follow that way, that I'm going to dominate, I'm going to control, I'm going to make this happen. You probably have heard numerous stories of biological major problems when we try to have domination or dominion. I mean, in Australia, they introduced the cane toad in order to eat this particular creature that was causing so much problems. What happened was they didn't know the cane toad has a toxic poison in its skin. And so all the goannas are dying in the state of Queensland as a result. Okay, they were set loose in the cane fields to be able to protect this creature, but now they have a whole worse problem now. But that's what happens when we have a sense of dominion and not stewardship. So, yes, way in the back. I'll come to you, Mary.
Thank you. I'll take you home. I'm a Eucharistic minister at Cottage Hospital on Sunday mornings. And after I have finished my rounds, I always stop by what they call the sacred space. It's a chapel in a non-denominational sense. And when it was built, the St. Francis Foundation used some money that they had had at the original St. Francis for a beautiful skylight. And then on the walls are four depictions in stained glass, very free-flowing, of water, wind, fire, and earth. It's just beautiful. So if you're ever at Cottage and want a place that is quiet, very peaceful, and very prayerful. And on what would be the altar, a Jewish artist created what she calls wings. And it's, I can't quite see it here, but it's like this. It's made of brass and it's beautiful. And then every person who goes into the chapel is invited silently to pick up a crane, one of the origami cranes made of paper that is right outside the chapel door. And you can write the name of a patient or a prayer intention, and they fill the area that would be considered the altar. It's really quite lovely. However, I have a comment about sacred space. Certainly this place is sacred. But I've thought for a long time that the most sacred space is the patient in the bed.
You're absolutely right. But don't forget, and this is the danger all of us can slip into, this either-or thing, that this space is more important than this space. Or the people here are more important than the people here. It's both and. It's both and. Think of the mirror. You have to keep coming back to that. And I know it takes discipline, not only intellectually, but emotionally as well. Because the more we do that, we're going to intend to canonize these folks and we're going to infantilize these folks. You see? We're going to raise up a person or a group and we're going to pull down someone else. So you're absolutely right. The patient is the sacred space. Your time with them is sacred time, but so is the room. So is all that comes to it. Okay?
Well, I like your talk today about sentient beings and all life. And I don't know, maybe it's in my later years, I really have cared about all life. I can't kill anything. So as probably a lot of you know, a few weeks ago it's been so dry and ants come in the house. And so some mornings I go in my bathroom and there's a whole stream of ants coming in. And I thought, what am I going to do? Because I'm not going to hurt them or spray them. So I simply said to them, I'm going to give you some water, and I put some little drops around the sink, but when I come back, I'm asking you to leave. Every day I'd come back. This went just 3 or 4 days. And sure enough, they drink, and they'd all be gone when I came back. So there is something about that communication that we honor each other. As silly as an ant might seem, and those are those teeny little ants, you know, but I kind of got into it. I was really enjoying where they were coming from and where they were going, and I was grateful they were gone when I came back.
Great story. I share with you your great sensitivity to creation. Please don't do what I did. I was stopped at a stop sign behind two other vehicles, and I happened to be distracted by the fact it was a little tiny spider just on my windshield on the inside. So I put my hand up, let the spider come onto my hand. I was getting ready to put it out the window. I didn't realize it accidentally took my foot off the brake, and I bumped into the person in front of me. So, yeah, so I had a chuckle at myself. It's like I was sensitive to the spider, but not to the person in front of me. So.
Good to see you again, Father.
Thank you, Michael.
I'm sure many people have heard of or read this book that was very popular in the last few years called, I might quite get it right, but the Magic of the Art of Tidying Up.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, and I was reminded of that when you were talking about simplifying our lives.
Yep.
And I'm a collector. Or no, I actually am not so much a collector as a never throw away-er. So I really appreciated the book. But what I thought of when you were talking about that was she said, in terms of like with clothing, is you take, and you have to do this all at once, you take every stitch of clothing you have and you pile it in the middle of the floor. And you pick the articles up one by one and you say, do I love this?
Yeah.
And you were saying, like, does this speak to me?
Exactly, yeah.
And if you don't, it goes in the giveaway, throwaway pile.
Yeah. Yep, excellent. Thank you. Yeah. And again, think of that in terms of who to pass it on to. Okay, not just giving your throw-offs to the poor, but might be a fairly new shirt or blouse or skirt. You realize, it just doesn't belong to me, really. It's time to let it go. And it's a real practice, real discipline. Okay, what I'd like to do now with the short time left is I'd like to put you into groups of 3 or 4. And here's the question. Getting back to creation, what is one part either in your own personal life or in creation as you view it? And that could be anything, like say a canyon, a charred forest, you have something to think about here. Or like say the decimated ruins that waters created, you know. What is that one area of your life you're having a difficult time translating or giving meaning to, okay? So, for example, those who have lost a loved one very often can readily identify either observing a picture or being in a place where a fire has swept through a forest. Everything is destroyed. It's like, yep, that's me. That's exactly. And they might immediately disperse into tears because they can identify it. It's a real mirror of what they're feeling on the inside. Literally everything's been ripped out of their heart. So in your own life, where do you find either something you can identify with as like a reflective mirror in the sense of meaning, or where is there a part in your life that you're still reacting to. You don't understand its meaning, but it keeps popping up. It could be a dream symbol. It could be something in creation. But you know God's trying to get through to you. Does that make sense? Okay? So, one more time, you get two choices. One is something you can identify with you already have seen in nature or just thought about, that it identifies with something you're going through right now. Or something that keeps manifesting itself to you and you have no idea what its meaning is for you, but you can't seem to shake it. All right? So you can pick one or the other. So groups of three or four, and I'll call time when we get there. Okay, thank you for sharing. You turn your chairs around. I would be remiss if we didn't speak about the obvious elephant in the room, and that is that you are in a community that has gone through tremendous devastation in terms of creation. And thanks to Maureen, she came up and asked if I couldn't make a few comments, facilitate some questions around this. And that is the question, what might God be saying? What might the Creator be saying through what's happened to your community via the realm of nature? Let me try and frame this. First off, an immature way would say, we have sinned. We've done something wrong and God's punishing us. That's a facile, very unprofessional way of looking at something that's complex and complicated, but it's fraught with meaning. The mature believer would say, God is speaking to us. That's correct. And then pause with a question. What is the meaning of this? What is God saying to us? This is where the wisdom of the community could begin to really help. It's not that one person would speak, whether it's a local bishop, local pastor, a wise woman, or wise elder to stand up. Rather, it's the type of thing the whole community needs to really prayerfully, honestly reflect on. What is God saying through this? You know? It's a great question. It's meant to stir us to a deeper maturity and a deeper embracing of reality as it is. Because remember, truth and reality are God's allies. They are not God's enemies. So reality is a lot of destruction. Okay? But to put blame anywhere, especially in the lap of God, and say, God did it. Well, God's angry at us. That is not an intimate knowledge of God. It's not the way God operates. But God is much more a redemptive God than a rescuing God. Okay? Think of how often in scriptures we are reminded, in fact, we just heard this gospel this past Sunday, where Mary and Martha basically said to Jesus, where were you? He's one of your best friends and you abandoned him? We sent a messenger to you. You waited till he died. Then you came. What's going on? Same thing in the garden of his agony. Father, take this away from me. I don't want to suffer. Where's God? Didn't answer his prayer. He's on the cross. God's not so much a rescuing God, protecting us from a flow of water, from the overwhelming heat and the flames and the fire. Rather, God is a redemptive God. Big difference. The rescuing God, that type of belief system, helps me stay as an infant, as a victim, as a child. I'll sit here and God's going to protect me. This is the whole perspective, even culturally, of what we call the patron system. You know, the patron who has the power, the money, political influence, they will do it. Okay? Jesus models for us, by his own struggles with his humanity, that that's not the way God is. God is a redemptive God. God is a presence. Rather, God stands with us and within us, observing what's happening, weeping with us, raging with us, wondering what's going on. That's the God we worship. That's the God we believe in. So this is why in Romans 8 we have that powerful, well-developed theology of Paul when he says, all of creation groans in agony, waiting for the final coming. To recognize that this is part of the unfolding nature of reality is that nature is constantly, like us, living, dying, and rising. Living, dying, and rising. It's just that it, some point, I'm being rather graphic here, that we got in the way of the dying. You see? Of the rocks coming down the hill, and the water coming down the hill, and the flames coming down the hill. And yes, people coming down the hill. Painful stuff. Painful stuff. Graduate level stuff. But God also knows that indeed there will be new life. There will be resurrection. Just as sure as the dawn's to come. And that's why spring comes after winter. It's a promise that behind every loss is always new life. Not just, you know, every once in a while. It's always new life. And here's the great surprise. It's never the way we think. It's never the way we think. So it's not so much that God is the cause, per se, the direct cause. Rather, that God causes a new way of experiencing reality, life, our life. And hopefully, this is God's dream, that God will call out of us greater maturity. That you will see, for example, people in need and you will respond. You'll see creatures in need and respond appropriately. That out of you will come, like God, a deeper patience, a deeper humility, a deeper love that connects. And in so doing, we once again reclaim, at an ever deeper level, this sense of awe and wonder before the power of creation, but more importantly, the power of God's presence. So, any final comments or questions before I close with a poem, one of my favorite from Mary Oliver? This one's entitled In Blackwater Woods, and this is for you as residents in this beautiful area. Look, the trees, this is called In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this, the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal. To hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal. To hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. My friends, that's a poetic summary of the Christian myth. This is, through the eyes of belief, we can look at what's happened. God bless you.
Wonderful. That's our send-off. Thank you very, very much for being here today. It's been a wonderful group because of Father Jim being here. I know that's why you all came out, but still we made it. We survived together, and we look forward to May, and we look forward to next fall being together again.